The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello, this is MotoGPOD, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 224 for Friday, 23rd April, 2010. You like that, Martin?
That's lovely.
My name is Jim Race from California, and I'm here with Martin Darlington, trapped in a hotel somewhere with dodgy Wi-Fi in the UK. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm down in Bristol, or Bristle, as the locals like to call it, just yet working away for a few days, and been watching the skies today and had a look at what it must have been like to have lived in the Low Countries during the war and seen just contrail after contrail as all the jets start flying again. But we'll come on to that a bit later on.
Yeah, I mean, that is kind of the big news of the day. We're going to have at least one or two interviews this week, but I don't have them solidified yet. I have done one, but the quality was a bit off, so I may end up putting that on the Facebook page, which hopefully most of you people know. But we also got a whole bunch of other stuff, including, and once again, just a massive, massive thanks. We got some additional donations, just to toss some names out. Travis Hinson, Alex Bavarel, again, he's our amusing Frenchman from New York City, and he actually threw a challenge out to me to get Mr. Depunier on the show, and I'm working on that, Alex. Bengt Brakstad, and he actually told me how to pronounce his name. I appreciate that. David Chaverdi of Fast Track Riders down in Southern California, who also bought through Cafe Press and is giving away a bunch of MotoGPOD shirts this week and at the Auto Club Speedway track days down south of me, Morten Johansson and Steve Edgar. So a million thanks, folks. You're keeping us going. You're keeping us on the road. You're keeping us providing you with all of the information that we make up and even some that we find out to be factual. So that's great. And we did get a lot of other listener emails, and There were a bunch, and we were trying to figure out what to do, but there was one from Ross Kemmerly that you picked up. Martin, I'll let you run with that.
Yeah, I'm not sure where Ross is, whether he's UK-based or across in the US, but he watched the Easter Holiday BSB races at Brands, came away with a couple of observations and a question. He liked the TV coverage, and certainly we've got used to pretty high standard on BSB since the early days when it was on ITV with a couple of commentators they dragged in from, I don't know, bowls or cricket. He says the Brands Hatch Indy Circuit is really, really short, which, yeah, and I think we've discussed that at length. And he was impressed with the BSB Umbrella Girls toughing it out in fairly cold weather. DMG take note is Ross's comment. So I'm guessing he's American-based. And his next question was what the Evolution class was. And it's basically, I mean, it's, in a way, it's a forerunner to what we may see in MotoGP in 2012, where we have two separate distinct classes running on the same track at the same time. Basically, the Evo classes are, to put it very simply, it's a superbike chassis with a superstock engine and a control ECU and a complete ban on traction control, launch control, and anti-wheelie control. So no electronic aids. And this is where the BMW team have fallen foul. Steve Brogan was entered in the first race as an Evo class bike or an Evo class team on the BMW S1000RR. But that's whilst the race organisers were looking at an incompatibility between the Motec control ECU and the BMW's fly-by-wire throttle system. So they've now said that from the last weekend, Thruxton onwards, he has to run as a full entry. He didn't do too badly. I mean, he's had a couple of top 10 finishes, but obviously that rule needs to be looked at a bit as more and more bikes are going to have electronics on as standard.
Right.
And it's replaced what was running up till last year as the Privateer Cup. So it means that the Evo class, you can run a team on a much lower budget. But you can win something at the end of the season. You're not going up against the factory teams and trying to beat them because, you know, let's face it, it's not going to happen. So it gives them something to compete for.
Yeah, indeed. And in a way, it's kind of what's been going on, as you say, like the migration to MotoGP and whatever's going to happen in 2012. But as I mentioned in the conversation I had with Julian Ryder, I imagine, and especially things like this, when you see those kind of incompatibilities, is why the rules are going to change between now and then. Because, you know, you throw out a generalized set of ideas and you see how it works. But especially if you're targeting something 2 years down the road, technology is moving way too fast. And
yeah,
so we'll really have to see what we end up with. But it's actually nice in a way to have somebody taking a stab at it early so that the premier class can learn lessons from them. And we'll have to see where it goes. So
one thing I would say to Ross and anyone else who's found access to the BSB races, Bank Holiday weekend, 1st, 2nd, 3rd of May. So that's Saturday, Sunday, Monday. The race is happening on the Monday, which may not suit some people stateside. Alton Park, that is going to be worth watching. They are a phenomenal, they often have phenomenal races there. It's a real typical British old-style circuit.
Indeed, and especially after, well, we had races in Thruxton this last weekend, and we'll talk about that shortly. And you are going to be at that race, and we'll talk later in the show because we'll try and see if we can put together a meet and greet on the far side, because we've done them over here at both Laguna and Indy, but we'll have our first Euro meet and greet, and that'll be cool. Yeah. What is the big news right now, Martin? I think we all know what it is, and I'm not even going to try and pronounce the name of this thing.
As I understand it, the volcano that's erupted, it looks awful, but it's meant to be pronounced...
Eyjafjallajökull.
So how do you think I did with that attempt there, Jim?
I think you did pretty well, although maybe your voice is changing.
Yeah, it's such a difficult word to say. My voice actually sounded like it was someone else saying it there.
It really did. You know, you shouldn't talk around Sharon like that too much. She might start... but what we're talking about, folks, as we all know, is the Icelandic eruptions with the volcano there. And what, you know, we were really looking forward this weekend, and it's obviously not going to happen to Motegi. GP race Motegi, and that has been postponed, not canceled, by the way, postponed until October 3rd. And, wow. And not only that, okay, you know, shattering our world is a GP postponed, but clearly... it has reached well beyond the sporting world, and flights not only in the British Isles and Europe, but all over the world have been canceled, and it's really kind of a monumental event with a whole bunch of really weird outcomes, and ones that are still going on as we speak.
Yeah, and of course the other problem is the airlines are trying to get back on schedule, and all their planes are in the wrong place, and a lot of their crews are in the wrong place. And some of the crews will have run out of crew duty hours because they've been away from home for so long. It's unprecedented, absolute nightmare. I was flying an aircraft the other day, a helicopter, doing a delivery to another base, and it was very quiet, and I was talking to an air traffic controller, just chatting away, and he said he's never known anything like it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even post 9/11, obviously that had a huge impact, but there was a single cause and effect. This is just the effects have been unknown, and it rather looks like people have overreacted. But in the litigating societies we live in the Western world, you can't really blame them.
True. And so just to remind everybody, Martin is a pilot for the Wales Air Ambulance Service, and he flies helicopters, which I'm assuming are all turbine-powered?
Yeah, we are twin turbines. We haven't been too badly affected. We were offline for a little bit, then we were back on. I'm actually working at one of my company's other bases down at Bristol for 3 days, last day tomorrow, then I go home, which is nice. But yeah, turbines is the problem. You've basically got a load of small metal aerofoil section blades in a compressor spinning at something like 65 to 75,000 RPM. And when you've got pumice stone, glass, and mixed with ice, which is what they're getting at the upper levels with the jets, that has a huge effect because the heat changes and the pumice stone. I mean, people use it to remove dead skin from their body because it's so abrasive. So you can imagine what that does to an engine.
Absolutely. And canopies and all that as well. All our MotoGPOD fans are going to go, oh, my God, they're going to just prattle on about airplanes and flying. But I do have to say that back in one of the first jobs I had when I moved to Northern California, back in 1982, was working at a facility that actually did testing of turbine blades. And it was actually very cool because it was using a process called neutron radiography, where you would basically dope these things with a chemical, gadolinium in this case. You throw them out over a reactor and expose film, and it would show you if there were blockages within the turbine blades themselves, because they have these little passages for cooling. Anyway, that's about the geekiest off-moto stuff that we've ever done, and I'll have to decide if I'm going to leave that in or not.
Oh, I could talk about pulmonary embolisms.
No.
I don't know what it is, but it's something medical.
All right, so the volcano. So Motegi is canceled, or not canceled. I keep saying it. Can't say it. It's postponed, so we have a gap now. And then our next race is going to be Jerez, which is at the beginning of next month. But in the meantime, we do have Assen. We did have some racing this last week, and then Mark and I, unfortunately, haven't had a chance to fully look at all the stuff from Thruxton, but there was a BSB race there, and I watched race one, and I kind of did it as a fan, and so I'm not really prepared to talk about it. You know, Michael Laverty had a bit of a tough weekend in qualifying. He managed to pretty much destroy his Taz Relentless Suzuki, and the team put it back together again. I think I sent you a couple of pictures, Martin. They were impressive.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah, definitely an ouch. And then James Ellison, what was the... I forgot the scoop there, but I believe he had a bit of an...
Yeah. He's in Saturday practice, he broke his femur.
Ow.
Which is, yeah, is not good at all. I can't find any how long he's going to be out for information. I've not had time to chase up the team website, if indeed they have one. But the interesting comment on MCN, the way they reported it, and I think this is probably this is probably something that's not quite meant to read the way it reads, said that James Ellison was very quick in practice, and he had a massive high side. Tommy Hill had gone off at the same corner, I believe, sustained a broken right femur. After being stabilised, he was taken to Winchester Hospital for further treatment. No apparent reason for the crash, and we've discussed this before, haven't we? The crash that you don't know why it happened.
Mm-hmm.
It says here the session was red flagged for the incident, but even after practice resumed, Ellison continued to top the timesheets. Now, I presume what it means there is he'd been so quick in the morning that people couldn't beat his time, because I can't believe he got back on and rode with a broken right femur. So, you know, MCN, come on, Gary Pynchon, sort out your grammar, because it rather reads as if he got back on and I thought, now that's heroic.
I'm pretty sure your interpretation of it was correct. And so Tommy Hill and Josh Brooks won, respectively, two BSB races. And both of us still need to catch up with that, and I'm sure we will.
Absolutely.
And I don't, off the top of my head, know who won BSS, but you folks over there on the other side of the pond, I'm sure you do, and we'll try and give more coverage there. And in fact, I'm going to talk about AMA this week, and it is not because of one particular person that has been pestering me about it. It is because there was some damn good racing. Not, you know, superbike classes were okay, but oh man, the Daytona sport bike races were absolutely impressive. And Road Atlanta is kind of a neat track, but there were some amazing dogfights. And in fact, probably one of the best passes that I've seen all year was executed by one Corey West, who going into turn 10 managed to pass, and I still haven't been able to count it, but I think he went from 5th or 6th to 1st in one corner in a massive group that was bare. It's a downhill hard right, and just it literally is the pass so far this year. And we'll have a link to that in the show notes for you folks, because I think everybody needs to look at that and just kind of goggle. It's amazing, absolutely amazing. So, and the AMA looks like it's getting themselves together again, kind of pulling things back together. The teams and riders seem to be appreciating it more. So if that is the case, then I may talk about AMA more as time goes on. But in the meantime, well done. Great weekend. A lot of national racing, and I was pretty amused. Hello, this is Jim Race for MotoGPOD, and on the line with me, I've got Jimmy Vanderhaar, a returning L-Man TT racer. How are you doing, Jimmy?
Doing all right. Had quite a long day, but, you know, we're settled down now.
Cool. Welcome to the show. Last year, and I want to get a little bit more detail about this, but last year at the Isle, you rented, I believe it was a 2006 ZX-10R, is that correct? Or leased?
Yeah, correct. It was kind of a last-minute thing, but yeah, we were able to get a hold of exactly an 06 ZX-10R from Robbie Sylvester and VRS Performance.
And you actually had a pretty cool support system over there, didn't you?
Well, we did. You know, in a way, you know, originally we had our own bikes that were going to be shipped over, and the bottom kind of fell out of that at the last minute. So, you know, but in the end, we ended up getting hooked up with this team, and although it did cost, you know, a bit of money, it was a really good thing because I had the support. You know, I had a teammate who had done the double at the Manx. He had won the junior and senior the same year at the Manx. So he is, you know, very knowledgeable on the place, as well as Robbie Sylvester, the team owner, you know, had raced a TT and lapped at 120 miles an hour before. So, you know, we had a great support system there.
Cool. And you did manage to qualify. Go ahead.
Yeah, I did. It was kind of interesting. We got over there, and I believe my very first lap, you know, they don't do official timing, but, you know, Gary, who was kind of my crew chief, who had come over there with me, had done the stopwatch, and he said my very first lap on my own was, I think, 106 miles an hour, and I felt like I was just crawling everywhere. So I was thinking, at that time, I was like, shoot, you know, I'll get this qualifying, you know, taken care of the next day we're out, no problem. You know, as we started to pick up some speed, I realized just how intense things really were. But in the end, we did make the qualifying time. So, yeah, it was great.
What did you use to train? I'm assuming videos and such like that, onboard stuff?
Yeah, it was kind of a weird thing because I've wanted to do the TT, you know, ever since I got into riding motorcycles, you know, and I'd been watching onboard videos fairly regularly, you know, I mean, really for about a year and a half before, I would kind of watch them, you know, probably once every couple weeks, and I certainly played the game quite a bit, but then after New Year's for 2009, you know, that's when we made the decision to try to race the TT in 09. We, you know, I really started watching the videos every day and playing the game religiously. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it helped, you know, it helped tremendously for sure.
So the first time that you were there as a racer, because I believe you'd gone before, right?
Well, yeah, what we did, we had a great plan for last year, which was I went over about a month before the event, and that was my first time seeing the place, and I can't tell you how happy I was that I did, because, you know, at that point, I could do a lap in my head as far as turns and whatnot, but, you know, so I'm thinking, well, you know, I know the place, this will be good. And we get there, and, you know, Milky's wife, Lydia Quayle, picked us up from the airport, Gary and I, and we're driving out of Quarter Bridge, and they're like, okay, we're turning onto the course, we're going backwards. And, you know, and I'm like, no, this isn't the course. And then we go, and we're driving up Bray Hill, and they're like, yeah, this is Bray Hill. And I'm like, no, there's no way. I'm like, I've seen the videos. I know you're flat out in sixth gear going down Bray Hill, and there's no way you could go flat out, you know, down this thing. It's way too steep. But turns out I was wrong, and that it was. So seeing it beforehand was massive because, you know, videos don't really do the elevation change justice.
Yep.
So, yeah. So yeah, so long story short, that was the only time I had been there. We were there for a weekend just to do a couple laps and scope the course out.
And I think, did Sean Harris take you around for lap two?
Sean Harris did. When Gary and I had been there, you know, for that weekend, it was just Milky took us on a lap the first day we were there, and then he took us on a lap right before we left. You know, and Milky Quayle, I'm not sure if you've ever talked to him, but he is definitely one of the best dudes ever. Super cool, really laid back, fun guy to be around. So he had taken us around then, and then when we were there for the race week, you know, I met up with Sean Harris, who had actually ridden for Gary before here in the U.S., and Gary had a decent relationship with him, and Sean took me around for a few laps. Okay. So yeah, you know, that was during the event.
Cool. And I guess the connection here is, and I'll throw this out there for all you weird chuckleheads, is that we kind of all know each other through WIRA, which is a national road racing club in the U.S. Now that I've got that out of the way, back to the TT. I want to ask you about something. I meant to ask Sean about this, and I have a feeling that as soon as I say it, you're going to go, uh-huh. tell me about the tunnel vision that you get on that course.
Oh, yeah, that is something, it's certainly unlike anything I've experienced. I think what it is, you know, my background is really in endurance racing, and to be fair, I'm not a very focused individual, so when I'm riding, I'm just kind of like looking around and, you know, thinking about what we're going to be doing afterwards and where we're going to dinner, and, you know, I don't really, you know, I ride really relaxed, you could say, you know, pretty laid back. But there, it's, you know, I don't really know what it is about the place, but it's almost like it forces you to really focus, and it's just like you get tunnel vision, and the only thing you can see is the course in front of you, and it's pretty amazing, because, you know, it's like you get used to the speed, you're going so fast for so long that everything really slows down. And you can pick out, you know, the sewer caps in the road and the little gutters, you know, on the side, and you know, and it's pretty amazing. It is. It's just like tunnel vision. You just get focused on that, you know, that area directly in front of you, and that's it. And it doesn't matter what else is going on around you. You're just focused on what, you know, what you're approaching.
So I'm pretty sure you heard the interview that I did with Mark Miller, and. One of the things that blew me away when I talked to him was that he said he didn't have any, like, braking or turn-in markers. And I couldn't even imagine. Granted, there's a lot of turns on the course. But do you do the same thing, or you just kind of have a mental map of where you're going to go?
No, you know, for me, I have to have those braking and turn-in markers. In fact, that was probably one of the biggest things is, you know, when I went over there, I thought, okay, well, I know the course. And then, you know, as soon as I did a lap in the car with Milky, I'm like, okay, wow, this is a lot to take in, because in, I mean, I don't know how many turns are around that place, 200 and some odd, you know, I don't know, but man, you know, having turn-in markers for most of them is really key for me, at least it was as a newcomer. You know, Mark's certainly been there, I think this will be his fifth year, I believe. And, you know, at that point, he could, I'm sure, do it on feel and has a much better grasp of the course. But for me, I really need those markers. And you'll see things. I mean, people go out and spray paint a dot on a tree, a big yellow. They'll just spray paint a tree yellow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there you go. That's your turn-in marker. Or they'll go out, you know, on the mountain section, there's those little posts. Someone will take one and spray paint it red, and you know, and you know, you use all different little things. I mean, coming into Kirkmichael Village, there's a little yellow, real small little yellow sewer grate thing, you know, and that's my turn-in marker for the first turn into the village. And, you know, like I say, for me, I really needed that stuff, but, you know, obviously Mark's been there quite a bit, so he can probably get by without it.
I think every racer that runs there. Well, and frankly, this is the same way in racing anywhere. Everybody has their own style and methodology of how they tackle a course. And it is what it is. You have a new teammate this year in Brandon Cretu. Another newcomer, and now you're a vet, quote unquote.
If you could say that, yeah.
Well, let's take a step back. Tell me about last year, because last year wasn't probably the best newcomer start for you. You had a bit of trouble, and part of it was motion sickness. We don't need to go into detail, unless you want to. But...
Right. Yeah, last year was really interesting for me. I'm not, you know, like I say, my background is endurance. So for me, bike setup and things like that, you know, I'm used to riding with other people and certainly getting thrown into situations where somebody throws the bike down the road and I got to jump on it and, you know, the treble clamps are twisted and everything's tweaked. But, you know, you got to go out there and ride it. So I've always had I feel like I've got a pretty good background in being able to jump on a bike, any bike, and ride, you know, fairly close to the times I'm capable of. So going there, the big thing that they tell you in the newcomer's briefing is for the first 2 days, no matter what the bike is doing, don't change a thing. Don't touch it. Mm. You know, so we, you know, and I'm certainly okay with that. So, you know, I went out, like I say, that first day, I think, you know, the first day I lapped at 106 miles an hour. And for me, that was a fantastic start. I was happy with that. You know, and then I went out the next practice day and and I started to get motion sick. And I don't really know what happened. I did my two laps and I came in and I said, you know, I'm not feeling well. And Robbie, the team owner, is like, okay, well, you know, that's fine if you're not feeling well, but you got about 5 minutes to get another lap in, so get out there and do it. So I drank some water and went out and was fine throughout the course, you know, throughout most of the stuff through the towns. And then once I got onto the mountain, just got this feeling of motion sickness and ended up getting sick while riding, which wasn't the most pleasant thing. But, you know, what can you do? You just keep riding and you know, pull in. And it was at that point, you know, I was pretty beat up. My back was hurting. And, you know, I was like, man, guys, this is a real handful. We started pushing on the bike and realizing the suspension setup was way not even close, you know, to something that's rideable. So, Sean Harris, that's when Sean Harris really came over and jumped in and made quite a few changes for us. And that helped loads. That helped loads.
I would imagine that, you know, clearly Dial is not like your average road racing course, and the amount of suspension travel that you get there is incredible. I mean, there are plenty of places where you basically bottom out your belly pan.
Right.
And so you've got a whole bunch of travel. You probably have to have a very, very hardcore top-out spring as well. And... which is funny because we were talking about that last night.
Right. True story.
Yeah. And suspension there is not at all like a short circuit. It's completely different. And it's probably good that you've actually stepped away with that additional knowledge to know what you're going to need this year. Now, again, we'll move forward again. You've got Brandon as your teammate, and the team you are riding for is?
Our official team name is Prestige Worldwide Racing.
Okay.
But really, we'll be riding under the Hell Performance banner. We'll be pitted out of the Hell. Hell Performance has a lorry or, you know, a semi.
I laughed there. You said, we'll be pitted out of Hell.
Yeah, right, pretty much. And, you know, they're providing us with leathers and you know, our bike, you know, paint scheme and everything will all be Hell Performance. So, you know, while we're there, we won't really be known as Prestige Worldwide. That was just kind of something we had to throw in. You know, Brandon and I needed a team name really for the organizers, so that was it. But essentially we'll be the Hell Performance setup at the TT.
Excellent. And for our listeners, Hell does brake lines, and do they do other stuff?
You know, as far as I know, it's mainly brake lines, at least here in the U.S. You know, MotoHeaven.com, Phil Caudill is the U.S. importer for Hell Performance. You know, and they do, like I say, I know they mainly do brake lines.
And you guys are going to be sort of pimping because you're in a paved paddock with a 40-foot trailer and awning and the whole nine yards.
Well, funny story, we're in the A paddock, which is where all the factory teams, you know, the Relentless by Taz Suzuki and HM Plant Honda and, you know, all those guys will be. However, it is not paved. The B paddock, which is where I was pitted last year, is paved, where a lot of the sidecar guys are. But, yeah, but anyway, yeah, we will be in the kind of high-end, top-notch paddock.
Sweet.
Area, yeah.
Well, I'm assuming, I was trying to help you guys out with some lodging, but I'm assuming you're already set up for that.
Yeah, we're squared away. Brandon did some research on, you know, the forums over there, and we were able to come up with a house really right on Bray Hill. So we're pretty excited about that.
So, what are your goals this year?
Well, you know, it's always scary mentioning your goals out loud for people to hear. But really, it's just to learn. You know, I'd be lying if I said I didn't, you know, I wasn't trying to, you know, hoping to do lap it over 120 miles an hour, which I feel like I'm capable of. But, you know, last year, in my head, that was my, you know, I told everybody I just want to qualify, but of course last year that was what I really wanted to do. But once I got out there mid practice week, I was like, yeah, you know what, those guys that are lapping that fast are heroes, and as long as I qualify, I'll be happy. So, you know, this year we'll be on much better equipment, and I'll definitely be a lot more prepared. I'm quite a bit more fit than I was. Last year I didn't train, I didn't work out in any way, but this year I've been running and cycling and whatnot, so I'm definitely in way better physical shape than I was last year. So yeah, bottom line is that's my goal is just to, you know, to hopefully reach the 120 mile an hour mark and come home in one piece.
Cool. And what kind of hardware are you going to be riding?
I'll have a GSXR 1000 and a, for all the big bike classes, for the senior, super stock, and super bike. And then I will have an R6 for the, two super sport races.
Nice. That should be fun. And frankly, those are, you know, sort of the, well, they, I guess they are the top tier. You think you're, I always wonder about this because do you need to qualify for the senior?
No. Well, not really. They changed qualifying this year. It used to be a set lap time, like under 20 minutes, which would be, you know, 113 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Now they've made it maybe 100 and, I don't know if it's 100, I think it's 109% of the third place qualifier's lap time. So it's kind of a variable qualifying thing this year, but yeah, I mean, there's no specific qualifying for the senior over anything else, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like you have to do this time to get into all the classes.
So you're talking essentially five races,
mm-hmm.
which and not to mention all of the practice in the first week of the fortnight, and you're talking probably about, I would have to guess, maybe 1,500 miles, and that takes a very serious toll on not only body but bike.
Yeah, true story. Yeah, that place is definitely harder on equipment than anything I've ever seen.
Yeah,
but you know we're getting bikes through Mark Hamilton, and you know that's who helped Brandon out last year with the Ulster Grand Prix, and
that's Irish Bike Magazine.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. You know, and I know he's done some work with Barry from Celtic Racing and whatnot. So, you know, he's got a pretty good background. And, you know, yeah, I know that the bikes are going to be well prepared. And he's also giving us spare engines and stuff as well in case we do have any problems.
Okay.
So, yeah, we should be in good shape.
So do you hear the clock ticking yet?
Yeah, Yeah, well, it seemed so far away, and now all of a sudden I'm like, oh no, it's only 5 weeks or whatever before I go over there.
Are you going to head over a fair bit early, or when?
No, I'm going to do the Weir National Endurance round at Miller Motorsports Park, that's May, 22nd, and then basically from there, let's see, that's Saturday, I'll fly back to Louisville Sunday, and then I'll probably be I'm actually going to fly to London, I think, and take the ferry over with Gary Hayes, but I think I'll be doing that maybe Tuesday, so.
Well, hopefully that friggin' volcano will be done with its stupidness by then.
Yeah, I sure hope so. I'm not sure. That's quite a long swim, so.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to tell me? You want to I'm assuming you have a series of sponsors here in the U.S., do you?
I do. As far as specific ones, first and foremost, I want to thank in advance Gary Hayes and Todd Welch, who is Gary was my crew chief from last year and a great friend who he now lives in England. Todd raced the TT in 2004, and him and I have been in contact since then, really. And he gave me a bunch of advice before I went. And anyway, he's going to come over and stay for the whole fortnight and help Brandon and I out as well this year. So definitely want to give it a shout-out to those guys. And here in the U.S., Arai Helmets, Olean's USA is helping us out a bit. Without a lower fairing to look at, I'm kind of lost. But, motoheaven.com, Phil, he's really helping us out quite a bit with the XES leathers and Hell Performance and all that. So.
Right on. Final question. Favorite pub?
Well, I actually don't drink, so favorite pub, I guess I would say the one that I get hassled the least.
yes, where you're not recognized, right?
Right. Well, no, I wouldn't say not. I would say hassled as far as, hey, you just did your first lap of the TT, you need a beer. And then, hey, you just finished your first TT, you need a beer. And, hey, it's TT week's over, you need a, But, yeah.
I hear you. All right, man. I wish you the best of luck, and you, like everybody else, try and plan on, and I intend to do this, getting all you guys on the phone. It's going to be a furious day for me on Matt Sunday.
Okay, yeah, fantastic. I'll definitely plan on it.
Yeah, we'll sort of recap your practice week and see where you're headed after that. I think it'd be fun.
Yeah, that sounds great, and definitely thanks a ton for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, but enjoy yourself, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks a ton, Jim.
Cheers. I'm going to talk about something now that some of you people out there are going to go, eh. Because,
I'm one of those. I have no idea what on earth. I've read the link you sent me. I've read it through. I have no idea what it means.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to say the name of it, and then I'll launch into a brief explanation. And then what I'll do is I'll start explaining to you the people actually involved in it, and actually a little bit of intrigue on the back end. As Motegi has been canceled, there is obviously, and almost everybody's heard of it if you're not on it, a sort of chat service called Twitter. And somebody, and I have my ideas who might really be behind this, but I'm going to keep those to myself for now, fired up something called the Twit GP, which even saying it just kind of makes me go, God, that sounds dumb. But it is a virtual replacement for Motegi because we all wanted to have a race there this weekend. They have already designed a circuit called Twitegi, and they have actual so they're going to do a virtual race this weekend. And they have announcers, including, get this, Martin, Toby and Julian are going to announce it. Susie Perry is running with it. We have wild cards with Max Biaggi and Mick Doohan, both of who are going to be in there, literally.
I kind of presumed that this was a big spoof. I mean, are they really going to have the real Mick Doohan and the real Max Biaggi?
I believe they are. Jorge Lorenzo is already involved. Eugene Laverty tried to get a wild card ride. There's a whole bunch of racers on Twitter already, and they're at last. There's media passes, of which I have one. The media has jumped all over it. Gavin, Matt, everybody. I think the whole thing is just for fun, but it's amazing how many people are involved, and we're talking thousands and thousands and thousands of people. There's like, it's a bit of a phenomena. I attempted to try to get the people behind it to come on the show this week, and for the nonce, they would like to remain anonymous, which of course for me just made me wonder even more.
But why, how is it? What are they? You say it's a virtual race. Are they using the PlayStation game or other games consoles are available. How are they going to race? This is what I don't get.
I think, Martin, it's essentially all going to be made up on the fly, just with people's imaginations. But they're going to do qualifying, practice qualifying the whole nine yards.
Mm. If they get real races, this is going to be interesting because none of them are going to want to be last.
No, exactly. Well, and it's really funny. There's been Fiat Yamaha team donated a signed Rossi shirt, right? There's going to be prizes and things like that. Well, Jorge Lorenzo now says he wants that shirt. <It's>... Granted, folks, okay, those of you out there that think Twitter is just, and Facebook are just a bunch of goofball things, I can totally understand that. And in fact, I've kind of backed off for a while, but I use them as resources. And in this particular case, I'm using it for entertainment. So we'll have a link to that. It is TwitGP. If you type in TWITGP into Google, you will be amazed at the amount of articles are already out there now, including in mainstream publications. So enough of that. But I did want to put it out there. I think it's cool. I also think, I imagine maybe next week we'll have whoever put this together in the first place on, because it is, here's a couple of things that I know off the top of my head. They have to be in the business because they have a lot of contacts. I know that.
Yeah.
And so that got me thinking, okay, who knows all of these people? And, you know, I can turn into the best net detective there is. And you have to be, actually, when you're doing what we're doing, to try and track down people to talk to all the time. So, enough of that. Whoosh, threw it away. Motegi, so we know that they moved it to October 3rd. Well, Martin, we know that that's actually also another race week.
Yeah, it's the final World Superbike races at Manicure. The only blessing is being in Japan, the MotoGP races will be several hours before the World Superbike races. But I do wonder if, I mean, I know MotoGP gets larger audiences, and a lot of people do place it above World Superbike in their list of priorities, but it might end up slightly overshadowed by the fact that you've got the culminating race as a World Superbike within a few hours. So it'd be interesting how it goes, but at least they're not going to clash directly. So, you know, on that front, it's a blessing.
Yeah, we'll have to see. We'll have to see how that goes. But on the other hand, you know, I kind of loathe at the beginning of the year the double race weekends, but I know as the year goes on and I kind of get back into the groove that it's not so bad. Really nice to have a plethora of things to talk about. But
an interesting point on the postponement, it's the luck of Rossi, or is it? I mean, he has a motocross accident, not seriously injured, but a bit knocked about and a bit bruised, and somehow the Norse gods get an Icelandic volcano and fire it at Europe, so he gets an extra 2 weeks to recover. It's like, you know, Lorenzo goes down at Donington last year, his bike's totaled. Rossi goes down, gets back on, and finishes fourth or fifth, whatever it was. It's like, huh? You know, the guy, I know Napoleon said, you know, give me a lucky general any day of the week, and you make your own luck, but he does seem to have a luck factory running for him somewhere in Italy.
Well, he does, and there's no doubt. And there's also no doubt that as soon as there were even whispers that they were going to postpone Motegi, there were people all over that started trying to generate these conspiracy theories that they were pushing the race off because they wanted to make sure that Rossi was healthy. And I'm like, oh, God, you know, you're...
I love conspiracy theorists because they're just so entertaining with the... complete nonsense they come out with. But it's a good one, yeah?
Yeah, well, you knew it was going to happen. I saw it coming. I did get a chance, actually, yesterday. Liam Schubert was, excuse me, was up here, and we had a bit of a chat. And as usual, we chatted about all the things that I can't talk about on the show. But it was great to see him, and I'm going to try and get down to the On the Throttle Studios for his show, which is after, I believe, after Jerez. So I may be on there, and we'll probably have Liam on again shortly as well. This weekend, but we talk all this doom and gloom, and there is something to look forward to, although with a measure of caution, because the very same event that we're looking forward to this weekend is being affected very clearly by the same stuff that we've been talking about with the ash clouds and whatnot, is ASIN. I'm excited, aren't you?
I am. I love the circuit. I know it's changed, and people who watched races at ASIN some years ago will say, well, it's a bit... I mean, Chaz was saying the same last week. He's disappointed because the first half has been somewhat diluted. I went to the MotoGP there last year. Absolutely loved it. The downside being, as you mentioned, Jim, the volcano. We were going to have Yoshimura Suzuki doing their World Superbike debut, and they can't get the bikes and the parts there in time. Probably a bit of a relief for the other riders because Yukio Kageyama was going to be running, and let's face it, he's not shy. But the good news is we're going to get to see Yukio running at Monza, hopefully, fingers crossed, on the Yoshimura in a couple of weeks' time. And that's an even crazier circuit. So, you know, we'll see how that one goes. But unfortunately, we're not going to see him this weekend. Certainly World Superbike website are not reporting any teams that are not going to make it.
Yeah, but I do know that, for example, the Brits, Leon, Eugene, Shaky, Leon Kent, or both Leons, had their flights canceled today. And so they are all mad scrambling to catch planes, trains, and automobiles to, or trains and automobiles to get across to get to ASIN. So nobody's having a whole lot of fun. Basically, if you're on an island right now, if you're not on the mainland, I think Eugene was actually already on, in Europe, but you know, everybody's still scrambling to make sure they get there within a reasonable time, and nobody's very happy.
Well, and Chaz was already planning last week to drive, wasn't he? He said, no, I'm going to drive there because at least he knows he'll get there then. Yeah. I mean, piston engine aircraft can go. They've been able to fly throughout because they can run filters. They don't operate in the same way, you know, and they can always go. I mean, these guys, I'm sure that they've got some very resourceful team managers who can, you know, just book us a 4-6-seater Cessna. It's a hop. I mean, you know, and you can drive there in a day from the UK, so long as you can get a ferry crossing.
Well, and that's the thing, is because as soon as the flights are all cancelled, everybody tries to hop on the ferry. And yeah. And because everything's so... Anyway, we could beleaguer that all the time. Everybody knows about it. It's a big, royal pain in the ass is what it is. And nobody's happy about it. You mentioned this, and I already knew about it. Tim Cutter ran a two-day private test at ASIN, their nominated home circuit. And I know that there was some feedback from the riders, basically, on... the changes in the circuit, which are in the back section, which Chaz mentioned last week. Well, he mentioned last week, which was mentioned by a couple of other riders, notably Max Neukirchner and, I'm going to say Andrew Pitt, but I can't remember off the top of my head. And Keenan was saying that it was quicker. He was claiming that he was 3 seconds quicker. It sounded like a fair amount of braggadocio. We'll have to... It really did, and that was in the official Honda announcement. We'll have to see how it goes. If that is the case, we should have ourselves a hell of a World Supersport battle, as we always do, and I'm looking forward to it. It should be fun.
Yeah, the interesting corner I always find is the chicane just before the home straight.
Oh, yeah.
We saw an interesting incident there last year when Bautista ran into the back of Ayama in the 250 race and then walked back into the pits having crashed, you know, suggesting Ayama had shut the throttle on him and brake tested him. Well, if he did, he failed the test. That's always an interesting corner. When I first read it, I thought, oh no, don't tell me you're taking the chicane out. That is fun. But no, it's a great track to watch. I think it's, you know, it's a, most of it is a good fast flowing track. Once they get past corners 2, 3, and 4, you know, it's after that, it's great.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, think of it going back, and you go back a long ways, but even just in recent memory, all the drama that's occurred in that last chicane, you had the Colin falling off incident. You had the Nikki Hayden.
Nikki running out of fuel.
Yeah.
What was it? Colin called it Karma Corner after that. That was brilliant.
Exactly. You had a one of the tightest three-way battles with Eugene, Cal, and Ioan Lescors there last year. A finish you had no idea what was going to happen. The chicane is drama. And I think for me, that is really one of the things that I really like about Assen, is that you really don't know who is going to win until they're across the finish line. And you know, that may sound very simplistic, but it's not necessarily the case. Okay.
And they all the riders seem to absolutely love it. Norrie Harker said how much he enjoys racing there. Johnny Ray loves it there. You know, it's going to be interesting.
They do, but with nostalgic reservations, those that have been there in the past. And they loved it better before, but it still does hold a special place. You know, it is still called the Cathedral. Maybe it's modified, but I'm looking forward to a great, great weekend of racing. And at least we'll have some. Yeah, and, you know, now I can't complain. We'll have a double race weekend.
Absolutely.
So you're going to Alton Park, and we would like to have this meet and greet. So why don't you put it together for us?
Right. Well, what I'm definitely going to be on race day, which is Bank Holiday Monday the 3rd, and I'm probably going to look at doing a meet and greet 10:45, which is just after. In fact, no, I think we'll probably go for 10 o'clock, which is the warm up for the 125 starting just after that. So if someone has to see that, okay, I'm going to miss them. And then possibly again in between races. And at the best place I can think of now, I haven't been there as a spectator for years, although I did a bunch of track days there last year. But the cafe, outside the cafe, is probably going to be the best place. I wouldn't mind doing a follow-up one in the afternoon, probably between the Superstock 1000, which run at 2:20, so about 3:15 to 3:00, outside the cafe again, if only to discuss race one of the Superbikes. And I am so looking forward to this. Straight after the race one of the VSB Superbike class is the Harley-Davidson XR1200 UK Premier, featuring Jeremy McWilliams, 46 years old, mad as a fish, absolutely, or mad as a box of frogs, as James Whitton would say. I will know by next week's show if I'm going to be there on the Saturday and or the Sunday as well. And we might be able to, you know, throw something in there if people want to come along. I will be wearing my yellow MotoGP OD suitably faded T-shirt, a veteran of Valencia, Catalonia and Assen, amongst others. And Sharon is definitely going to come with me on race day. She may be with me on the earlier days. So if you see a very pretty blonde girl with a short, fat, ugly bloke with a yellow T-shirt on, that's us.
Oh, I like that description.
I know you guys have met up with, you know, listeners at Laguna and at Indy, and you've all said what a great experience it is, how many people you meet. And, if we get anyone coming along, it'd be fantastic.
Absolutely, and I know for a fact that we'll definitely have fans at Alton Park, so we'll see if we can hook that up. And once we have the exact times figured out, we'll go ahead and put that in the show notes either this week or next week, and it should be fun. You'll have fun, Martin. Trust me, it is a hoot. Take lots of pictures. They're always very special.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I just want to see them wrestling an XR1200 around that circuit. That's going to be awesome. And I'm also looking forward to seeing the Superbikes going up the hill, up Clay Hill. It's going to be something to see. Cool. I've got one last thing.
Sure.
And this is very, very long term. This probably is not something that may happen, but you will have noticed, Jim, and I'm springing on this on you completely out of the blue. On future shows, I've added a little one at the bottom. This is probably going to be a closed season thing if we ever get round to it. And it's the nature of motorcycling. What makes a real biker? So if any listeners want to fire emails in, I will collate them. And if we ever have a week where we really can't think of anything else to talk about, I'm just thinking of how successful your and Jules' biking film show was. And I was thinking, well, what makes a real biker? And I'm not going to put my tuppenny worth in at this stage, because I want to leave it a bleak, completely blank canvas. But if people have got opinions, it'd be really interesting. And I very strongly suspect that you and I and 95% of our listeners will have the same opinion. But there you go.
Interesting. Very. I think when you say biker, are you talking about just rider or as a race fan?
No. As a motorcyclist, someone who rides motorbikes.
Okay.
You know, is there such a thing as a real, in inverted commas, biker, a proper biker? You know, are there some people who do own and ride motorcycles you think, well, they're not what I'd consider a proper biker? And if not, why not? What are they doing wrong? You know.
Well, there are the classic weekend warrior types. But anyway, I get your gist, and I would be interested to hear that commentary from our fans. And as usual, we love hearing from you guys. It's totally fun. And keep it up. Keep it up. And in fact, it's actually almost more fun when we start getting, sometimes it can get long, but when we start getting into back and forth conversations, there's an awful lot of talking that occurs in email because we are all chatty.
Yeah.
As you can tell, sometimes we can't shut up. And so feel free to write in, and we'd be happy to talk to you. I'm looking forward to Aston this weekend, Martin. Should be very, very cool. And we'll talk about that next week and break that race down. And I hope you can get yourself back home again. I'm sure you want to get back and be with her.
I'm home tomorrow night, and I can't wait. And I've just knocked my headset off, so that probably came out sounding really strange.
Yeah, well, you're literally in a semi-foreign county, as it will. All right, so MotoGPOD fans and everybody out there, thank you so much for downloading the show. We understand, much like air travel and everything else, this one was a bit helter-skelter. But next week, we'll have something very, very cool to talk about, which is the Aston races. And maybe things will be back to a little bit of normal. That would be nice. Martin, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim, and good night all.
All right, cheers.
MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGPOD isn't affiliated with any of them.